Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Psychic Matters podcast, episode number 58. Thank you to all of those who have left me a written review. I am so grateful, as they really do and really have helped the podcast move up the podcast charts. We made it this week to number 31 in the UK spirituality charts, and that is really, really good. And just to be in the top 100 is amazing, let alone get to number 31. Thank you so much to all of you for listening and supporting. And just to put that in context, in France, we are 4,101. In Canada, we are at position 3,919. And in India this week, we are 4,739 in the charts. So we are doing very, very well. So thank you. Keep the reviews rolling in. That's just absolutely amazing. And of course, if you did wish to leave a written review and try to elevate us closer to the number one slot, that elusive, lovely place where I'd love to get, please do that either on Apple Podcasts or go to a website called podchaser.com and search for Psychic Matters, and you can leave a review for me there. So thank you for taking the time to do that. So hugely appreciated. Today we are discussing the role of the soul. And some of you may have heard of the term soul appraisal, and you may be wondering, what exactly is that? What does it entail? Well, a soul appraisal is a type of one-to-one reading especially suited to anyone committed to understanding themselves more fully. And I'm joined this week by Darren Britton, one of the most sought-after evidential mediums and teachers working today. And he discusses his experiences and his understanding of the alignment between human identity and the soul. Darren explains that as soul beings, we're already existing in the spirit world, and when working mediumistically, we have to look at removing our identity and our judgments and our beliefs and expectations so that we can identify with the soul, and only then can what is present become revealed. I know you are going to love this episode. Evidential medium, psychic tutor, author Darren Britton joins me in the Psychic Matters studio today. Darren, welcome to Psychic Matters.
Thank you very much, Anne. It's lovely to see you and lovely to be here.
Oh, we are so thrilled to have you on the show. I can't tell you how exciting it is to have you here.
Thank you. And we
know that you've had so much experience in the world of mediumship and psychic work, of course, and soul work. And as mediumship evolves, so do we as people. And I was wondering, Darren, where has your work taken you to? At what point are you at now in the work that you're doing in the world?
That's a great question, actually, because really when I started mediumship 30 years ago, I thought that was it forever. That was how it would be. That would be, you know, the kind of getting up, demonstrating, doing private readings, and that would be it. And of course, you're absolutely right that as we evolve, the phenomena of our work evolves as well, and how it becomes expressed in the world changes as we do. So currently, I still teach, I still demonstrate evidential mediumship publicly, although I've actually stopped doing one-to-one evidential readings now for lots of reasons. I've noticed over a period of time that there were people that were coming for readings that really wanted something beyond the evidence of the spirit world. I think that the way that their lives and the world generally has changed is that people were looking to understand themselves more rather than looking outside of themselves for answers to who they are and what their life is really about. So my work naturally, I think, has evolved in line with those changes personally and collectively. And so now I really work on something that I call soul appraisals, which is really looking at the very many levels of the self, including the ego, the mind, the soul, and the intent that's held within each of those aspects.
And Darren, that's really interesting about the soul appraisal and the different aspects of it. For someone who's listening to this, who perhaps would like to book a soul appraisal, or just maybe not even book one, just learn a little bit more about what they involve, can you go into a little bit more detail? So if somebody comes to you for a reading for a soul appraisal, what might they expect?
So really when I do an appraisal, traditionally an appraisal is really looking at those elements of the medium that are working with their mediumship, their spiritual awareness. So typically they are focused only on a specific area. But because I recognize that, and many people are recognizing now, that we are a spiritual being having a human experience, and that so part of the appraisal is really about looking at you holistically, what's going on within your identity. So I think it was sort of Deepak Chopra said that the ego is our self-image. It's not our true self. It's characterized by labels and masks and images and judgments. And so part of the appraisal is looking at those elements, because the identity really is a construct based on all of those things that Deepak recognizes. So part of the appraisal is looking at what's going on within the top layer of our life, because the identity really is the wrapping of who we are truly. So part of the appraisal is looking at work, health, family, relationships, how people are feeling about those areas, and really what's going on the surface. But then also looking beneath the surface, you know, what are the emotional things that are underpinning those choices, those experiences? So that's one level. The other level is that we are a spiritual being. We are a soul that has come into this life to experience, to grow, to evolve, to teach, to learn. And so the soul also has an intent. So the soul will bring to it those aspects that it needs to be able to evolve. And so it moves us towards certain people, certain places. It moves us out of certain situations and closer to certain people as well that are in alignment with what it desires. So that's the second element, really. And then the third bit is looking at the alignment between the identity and the soul. Which areas of life are you living authentically? And really, the authenticity is about the alignment between the soul and the identity. And which areas are you not? And if not, why not? What are the things that are blocking that or obstacles to achieving that?
So that's really fascinates me. And then as a medium yourself, how do you pick up this information? So there are people in the listenership here for Psychic Matters. Some are working mediums, some are training, some are beginning, and some are interested in the topic. But I wonder if you could explain a little about how you can feel into somebody and pick up that information from them for them.
So it's really a soul-to-soul connection. So I identify with the power of my own soul that is expressing its awareness. And by identifying that person's need, you know, my soul responds, if you like, to their soul need or their soul desire to express. So it's really a psychic and intuitive process. I always keep a part of my awareness with the spirit world anyway, in case there are needs for them to interject, to give guidance or advice as well. So the spirit world is by no means separate to this experience. They're inclusive, but it's really a soul-to-soul connection, a psychic or intuitive link.
It's just brilliant. And I've been the lucky recipient of one of your soul appraisals, and it was just beautiful. And it was so specific as to what my passions are, what I love to do, where I was even thinking of taking, but wasn't sure where I should take my life going forward. And you really picked up on some very specific things for me. Thank you very much for that.
And no, you're welcome. And there still has to be, even though it's not evidential mediumship, there always has to be an evidential quality to our work as psychics, as intuitives, as mediums, and as healers to a degree. So there shouldn't be an absence of evidence. You know, it's just that the evidence is different compared to evidential mediumship.
Yeah. And I also, you talked there about the spirit world being involved and how you keep your awareness with the spirit world very much as well during these soul appraisals. And I was watching you demonstrate mediumship, and what I really took away from that by watching you work was how strongly you were connected to spirit, where these spirit communicators became so very present within you that you were able to just give this most extraordinary information, names, dates, places, people's occupations, things like this that were very, very evidential for the recipient. And I was just blown away by the way that the spirit world and you merge together. And also maybe for people listening who are mediums, who do work and want to become more progressive and better and give more evidence, how can we bring spirit that close to us?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question, because I think, and the language you've used there, and how can we bring them close to us, there is no separation. That's the truth of it. We are already, as spiritual beings, as souls, we're already existing in the spirit world. We're already there. So there really is no space between us other than the way that the mind constructs that division. So really to be the best medium we can be, we really have to look at removing our identity. We have to be willing to lose ourselves, to lose all those things that Deepak spoke about, you know, the labels, the masks, the images, the judgments, the beliefs, the expectations. We have to give that up for that period of time that we work with the spirit world, and that we have to learn to identify with the soul that we are, without the mind, without the judgments, without that identity. And then what's already present becomes revealed. So they're really, in my mediumistic state, they're really, on a good day, on a bad day, it's not always as clear, but on a good day, there is no separation between me and the other world, that my mind doesn't interfere, sabotage, create different stories. It really is just, I'm there, they're here, there's no space between us. And that's when mediumship, I think, of any description can be at its most phenomenal, when we, the medium, become separate to it rather than involved in it.
Do you think then that we, rather than seeing a separation between us and the spirit world, we ought to see a separation between us and the physical world?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because really what we're doing when we do that attunement process, we're actually bringing to our awareness what's already present. You know, it's already there. The spirit world are already here right now. But really what separates us is the mind and the beliefs that we hold about that separation. So, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, when we sit in a room, we're filled in this room right now with TV waves and radio waves and text messages and WhatsApp and all this technology, and all these things are buzzing around. But they only start to become evident to us when we have a receiver that's on its wavelength. All that the medium does is alters their wavelength to be in harmony with the world that's already present. And then we start to access the information that's available that, for the most part, is outside of our awareness. So really, it's no different. When we can identify with the truth of who we spiritually are, then we're already in the spirit world. And that, therefore, makes everything available.
And you have done this for many, many years. And you must have, like all the rest of us listening who are working as mediums, have developed to this point that you're at now, and hopefully will continue to develop and progress yourself. But I know myself, I watched or used to watch people like you when I was beginning to develop my mediumship, and I used to think, oh gosh, I'll never get there. I'll never, how on earth does that happen? You have to be born that way. You have to have this immediately from a child and be that good immediately. But I don't believe that's true. And yet there is a period of progression. So how did your mediumship begin to build?
So I was very fortunate, because I walked into a spiritualist church at 17 thinking they were a bunch of crazy people. I would go once and never again. And then by the end of the evening, I was receiving information from the spirit world, and there was an evidential quality to it, which really got me hooked. And so I went every week, but I was blessed in as much as I didn't have the influence of attending lots of workshops or seeing huge amounts of mediums or going to lectures or seminars because of where I lived. You know, I was in the middle of a very small mining community that was miles from anywhere where these events would have gone on. And so I just sat with the spirit world. I didn't have anything in my kind of knowledge base to conflict what the spirit world told me. So I trusted it. There was no separation. There was no involvement of my mind. So that doesn't mean to say that I accepted easily everything that I was taught or everything the spirit world gave to me, because I was always a very curious child and a curious person, and still am. But I always have to have something to back up. You know, there's got to be an evidential quality even now to everything. You know, let's look at, why does that make sense? What else might that be? So I always had that part of me, which was really helpful for me to reach higher, to reach for more, not just to become accepting of what I might have classed as being average, mediocre, or explained away by other phenomena. So I think that was the thing that motivated me to reach for more evidence. So I remember very clearly thinking in circle, well, if the spirit people can give me their first name, why can't they give me their last name? You know, if that's available, if that person's talking to me, why are we settling for just the small amount of information? If this loved one wants to prove that they're absolutely here, then what's stopping them? And the truth is, nothing. What stops us is the mediumship. You know, what stops us is the mind of the medium that believes that that's not available, or I can't do it, or like you said, I'm never going to get there, you know? So I think that we have the potential to really limit how the soul and the expression of it starts to grow. And so I think very early on for me, I was very clear that there's always more available. And I wanted to be in alignment with that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We do limit our own potential, I think. And going back as a child, you've written a brilliant book called From Innocence to Inner Sense. And in that book, Darren, you speak about your experiences as a child, seeing lights around people. And I know that went with some migraines that you were experiencing. Mm. So how old were you when you were seeing those lights around people?
It presented around about 14, actually, which I think is a very common time for migraines to actually present as well. I think there's on an energetic level, certainly migraines very much present, usually when there's an emotional conflict. And at that time, at 14, many of us are in emotional conflict. So I think it presents at that time for many people. But the lights that I was seeing were present when I didn't have headaches, and they were not just the random lights that I used to experience with migraine. They would be actually around person as a form, you know. So I would sit in class and look at the movement of these lights and this energy around my fellow students. Yeah, so that's really when my awareness of something non-physical started to present. But it was 3 years later when I went to the Spiritualist Church to explore it further.
And when you saw those lights, did you tell your parents, or did you tell anybody you were seeing them and see if they could see them too?
I spoke to my friend Martin at school, and I remember sitting with him and putting my hand in front on top of my leg, and I said, "Can you not see the light around the hand, around the fingers?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Let me look at yours." And I could see it. And I actually drew on a piece of paper around his fingers where I saw the light. And of course, he couldn't see it. And I think that was a great sense of the reality that something was going on here that was not migraine. And then I spoke to my mum, and as any good mum would do, "Let's go and get your eyes tested. Let's go and get this checked out." And, you know, kind of optically, everything was fine. So it didn't ease the curiosity about what this was. If anything, it furthered it.
And so then when you went to your first Spiritualist church, were they able to explain what those lights were to you?
Yeah. So I spoke to a lady when I went in, and, you know, she was, she since became a very good friend, and, you know, she was a beautiful medium and a lovely, lovely person. But at the time that I met her, first of all, I thought she was crazy, completely off her face, you know, completely mental. But I did tell her about the lights, and she explained that I'd been seeing lights around people. And she said, "You know, this is an aura. You're seeing the energy of a person." So she really, in that communication, that very first message that I received, she was able to explain to me that that's what it was. And it gave a reality to it then that I could grasp onto a name and research it from that point.
That's great. And then so in that church, did you then join a development circle and progress onwards from there? Or what was your progression after that?
So I'd been there for about 3 or 4 months. And then one of the older ladies in the church ran a home circle and asked me if I would want to come and sit. And so I sat with my good friend Frieda, and a lady called Anne Hunsley, who was in a local area. And so we just sat in a home circle that she ran. And it was just a very beautiful experience. Again, I had nothing to compare it to. I had no outside influence to tell me what I should be doing or shouldn't be doing. We just sat to allow the spirit world to blend with us and to express what we got. So it was a very, very formative time in my, I think, trusting of the spirit world, because there was no techniques involved. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to prove anything. It was just about sitting and allowing them to blend with us and teaching the mind, as always now, to move out of the way. So that was really when my first development circle kind of began.
And that sounds like a really positive experience for you. Mm. It sounds gentle and very caring and nurturing, that circle.
It was. And I remember being sat there on my 18th birthday, and everybody was absolutely shocked. Why are you not outside getting drunk? Why are you not in the pub? But again, in that moment, that's what I wanted to do. That was what my soul, I guess, was. It had woken up, it was being heard, and it wanted to, you know, express itself. So there was no desire to do anything else other than to explore this new aspect of my world.
So what took you to the platform then? How did you get onto the platform and be brave enough to do that? Did that take very long?
It was within a year. And interestingly, Phyllis, the lady who gave me the very first communication, she said to me as part of her communication, "You will do this work and within a year you'll be on platform." And I laughed because I just thought that was a crazy thing for anybody to say. And especially what I'd learned from people is that they were all saying, "You have to do this for years before you take that step. You know, this doesn't happen quickly. You have to be patient. Don't run before you can walk." And so I was kind of prepared for it to not happen, first of all, at all. And then when there were signs that it was happening, it would be a little while before I could take that step. And I'm sure many of your listeners will know, many mediums, when they first start to do their public work, they're often thrust into it. You know, it's not always a willing choice to take that place. And I'd gone with my friend Frieda to a separate spiritualist church. And that church was a very broken down, run down, dark little hut in the middle of nowhere, but had such an amazing feeling in it. And so we went on a Sunday afternoon, and I just sat there with an absolute feeling that I wanted to demonstrate, that I wanted to work. Just the weirdest feeling, just a sense that I wanted to express this mediumship. And I just happened to say it to Frieda, just absentmindedly, not knowing who the mediums were. And it turns out that they were good friends of Frieda that were taking the service. And so she slipped away and had a very gentle word with them and said, "Would you mind if my friend Darren just kind of came up and gave a couple of messages?" And that was it. So I then got invited onto the platform with really shaky knees and a sick bucket just in case. And it went really well. I don't remember much about it. I remember pointing to a lady at the back of the room and talking about her mother and some item of jewellery that she kept. But other than that, it's a blur even now.
And it's interesting you say that, because as mediums, we don't often remember what we've just given to somebody. Can you maybe explain to people listening why that would be?
Sure. So when we identify with the power of the soul, when we identify with our mediumship to that degree that the conscious mind moves out, then what happens is, in the mediumistic state, we become a vehicle. We become typically the medium, you know, the conduit for that information that is not being affected by or influenced by the conscious mind. The mind just sits on a shelf and observes the mediumistic experience. Best case scenario. So when we're in that mediumistic state where we're not thinking, we're just allowing and surrendering, that information comes through. The mind is of no value in that experience. So in that mediumistic state, the subconscious parts of the mind are more present and more at the surface. So often when we give mediumship, we're very present and very conscious when we're in it. But as we become disidentified from the soul and our mediumistic state, and the conscious mind starts to become more present, because the mind was the observer and not the originator of the experience, it's often very common that we don't consciously remember what we've given unless somebody starts to trigger that memory from our subconscious by reminding us what we've said. So it's very uncommon. And actually, it's one of the way that the mind behaves in the mediumistic state is actually very suggestive of how closely connected we are to the spirit.
Yeah, it's a really good explanation. Thank you, Darren. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
And what do you think, as mediums, we expect from our recipient? Because we're often, we know what the recipients expect from us. They want lovely yeah. evidence from their loved ones. But what are we as mediums expecting from our recipients?
You know, I have this running joke with my students, and I say, I don't trust recipients. They're slippery customers. They're slippery fish, you know. And I mean that in the most respectful way, because, you know, I am a recipient at times as well. And I, like many of us, you know, my mind goes blank. I can't recall everything. You know, I'm not always the easiest of recipients in that respect. But I think that as a medium, my expectation of the recipients is that they're, first of all, going to be honest with me. You know, they're going to be honest in what I'm offering and what in their offering to me as well. You know, there have been times when recipients come, and I understand the guardedness. I understand that they want to ensure that what you're getting is from the spirit world, that they're not, you know, you're not gleaning information from them. So I understand defensiveness. I understand guardedness. I understand how grief can make that happen for people. But I expect for them to be honest. I expect them to engage in this dialogue, in this reunion, in this communication, you know, as if they would if that person were physically in the room. You know, be excited about being there, be excited and hopeful about what might come from that experience. So that's what I would expect from them.
And in terms of whether they say yes, no, maybe, or give you a whole long explanation, what are we expecting in that term?
So
to us?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one. And interesting, since working on Zoom, it seems that because people seem much more chatty, recipients seem much more chatty in one of their responses. They feel the need to explain to you what you're getting and why you're getting it. And for me as a medium, that is not helpful at all, because it engages my mind again. You know, I've worked really hard to get my mind to get on the shelf and sit there and observe. But when the recipient starts to enter a dialogue with the medium, there's a potential that the mind of the medium starts to become more engaged, and therefore we disconnect from our awareness. So from my perspective, I only ever want people to say yes or no. I don't require them even to speak at all sometimes, because it's really about me being held by the other world and just the expression of that. Now, on a practical level, as mediums, we need to have the involvement of the recipient certainly if we're demonstrating publicly, just so that other people are involved in the experience, you know, that they can witness the reality of the spirit world communicating, and that they can see that the yeses mean that we're getting it right and that there's a reality there. So it's nice if people respond, but really, I would, for me, it can often be a distraction.
You have just mentioned working on Zoom, and obviously I know that you have worked many times in person and continue to work in person as well, pandemic allowing. What's the difference, Darren, do you find between online and in person, and which do you prefer?
Wow. I have to say, after 30 years of trawling around the country and working and getting on and off planes, I prefer Zoom. It's nice to have a break from the physicality of, you know, staying in hotels and, you know, traveling and all the stresses that brings. So the differences are really noticeable, I think, because obviously when people are on Zoom, you know, from a recipient's perspective, they are often not fully present. You know, there's a TV on in the other part of the room. They're looking at a computer screen for a demonstration. They might be eating their dinner. They're having conversations with other people that are present. So, you know, whereas in a church or a center or a theater even, you know, you as the medium are the focal point, you know. So there are so many distractions for the recipient. And that, I think, can lead us as the medium to sometimes feel like we're not being engaged with fully, you know. And that can, you know, be unsettling for one. Often when everybody's on mute, it's a very lonely place, it feels, when you are so, you know, when you're in your mediumistic state and you're being held by the spirit world, but you're giving information out and there's a wall of silence, that can be quite disconcerting as well. In terms of the benefits of it, certainly from my perspective, when I demonstrate publicly, I always have to keep a part of my awareness on the audience. I'm noticing, you know, when people are putting their hands up, I'm keeping an awareness of engaging as many people as we can in the experience, you know, by doing that with my personality and, you know, kind of including people in the experience. But on Zoom, I don't have to keep a part of my awareness on the room. You know, usually there's a host or an organizer that is watching the room on my behalf. So in that respect, I can give more of my awareness to the spirit world. I don't have to be as present in this world as I do publicly. So they're the main benefits, I think, from my perspective.
And just going back, Darren, just going back to what we were just speaking about, the recipient interacting with us as mediums. Do you find that if a recipient says, yes, I can take that, or if you say, do you understand that information, they say yes, do you find that helps to build the energy between you, the recipient, and the spirit world? So it's a three-way conversation, or do you find that that is interrupts the procedure for you?
Yeah, I think that I think it's a mistake to think that we need, as mediums, we need their voice to make a link with the spirit world. I think that's inaccurate. We don't need their voice to make that link. Certainly from my perspective as a medium, if we have the choice between two or three people who can accept the information, you know, traditionally mediums, you know, check in with each recipient, which can you understand, how many yeses can I get? And traditionally the medium will give that contact to the person that says yes the most. And that's never really been my way of operating as a medium. So when that situation arises, I would really move into holding my connection with the spirit communicator and asking each recipient to speak, just to say hello to me. And what I'm looking for in that interaction is that the spirit communicator will respond to the person that they recognize. So in effect, rather than letting the recipient choose, I'm letting the spirit person choose. Because even if a person says yes five times, that still doesn't necessarily mean that that's the right connection. So in terms of using the voice, you know, I can hear vibrationally, I can feel when I hear the voice, whether that's the correct recipient. So I think that I don't need the recipient to actually make mediumship work, you know, generally speaking, but it can be quite helpful in that respect to identify who the recipient is for the correct spirit communicator.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great explanation. And I love watching you when someone, you offer some information to a recipient and they say no, then what you do with that information is you say, let me help you unfold that, or let me help you understand that, which I think is a beautiful way of working.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's so important, I think, because, you know, we've all seen, not to be unkind about anybody, but we've all seen really mediocre mediumship. And I think one of the things about Zoom is that the world has opened up for mediums now, which is on one level great, but there's such a diversity. And I've witnessed so much, you know, so many things in the name of mediumship where things are just left. There's unfinished, you know, and, you know, well, think about that, take that with you. And whilst on some level we have to do that sometimes there's great evidence that can come from research, you know, outside of the mediumship experience, I think we have to follow the line, you know, as far as we can go as mediums to ensure that the recipient has as much information available. And remember, from the spirit's perspective, they want to be heard. They want their loved ones to know I made it and I'm okay. So they're going to come with that available information. So we just have to be in alignment with that. So if a recipient says no, I don't trust it, for one. I don't trust that no means, you know, there's nowhere else to go with that. So yes, let me help you. Let us help you understand that, because that's really what the spirit communicator wants. They want them to know I'm here. And also, I think as an Aryan, and I'm not good at letting things go, you know, so I'm a person that likes to, you know, I don't like unfinished business, you know, so in that respect, I need to follow the line and see how far we can go with this.
What about mediums who are out there working and trying out different methods and so on, and they're bringing forward someone from the spirit world, but nobody can take them? Why do you think we bring forward sometimes people like that who are very, very real to us as mediums, who are very, very present, but no one can actually accept the evidence that you're offering?
Mm. It's incredibly, first of all, frustrating for the medium, isn't it? Because, you know, it's real to us. You know, it's absolutely real to us, and we can't deny that we're in touch with that loved one. And I think there's a few different reasons for that. Maybe the recipient is not feeling brave enough to respond. That's the first thing. You know, maybe that information that's coming forward is falling on deaf ears for lots of reasons. You know, they may be fearful of speaking in public. They may be not wanting you to know their business. They may be with people in the audience that they don't want to know their business as well. So a no doesn't necessarily mean, first of all, that we are wrong as mediums. I think linking to what I said earlier, that there are times when we have to research, you know, we have to look into that evidence. There are many times I've been given information from mediums and it meant nothing to me whatsoever at the time. And yet when I've checked it, it's turned out to be highly evidential. You know, there was one of my students gave me a communication once, and she gave me the name of the sanatorium that my grandfather was in when he had tuberculosis many years ago. That happened well before I was even born. And yet she gave me the name. And when I checked it with my mum, it was incredibly accurate, you know? So it was beyond my knowledge of understanding, not beyond my experience. And so it was highly evidential for my mum. And I think sometimes there's an intelligence at play here that sometimes we have to be willing to research that, you know? So I think that can be a reason why sometimes it seems to kind of fall flat. But if the recipient is willing to take that evidence and research it, the intelligence of the spirit world will become really evident in that.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. Thank you, Darren. So talk to us then a little bit about spiritualism. So we've got spiritualist churches and then we've got spiritual centres. And people listening may not understand the difference between spiritualism or a spiritualist centre. So maybe you could explain a little about that.
Thank you. So first of all, I would say I'm not a spiritualist. And the reason I'm not a spiritualist is because whenever we start to identify with a belief system, we are engaged with the mind. You know, the ego becomes very identified with it. We accept it's a part of us and we become a part of it. And then we become very entrenched sometimes in that because we personalize it. We find it very difficult to think differently, to go beyond the limits or the construct that presents. And what that also does, when we start to identify ourselves as a thing, it has the potential to disconnect us from the spiritual dimensions of ourself. And certainly as a spiritual being that I acknowledge that I am, I want to be able to express the potential of my soul without any of those limitations or restrictions of the mind and all those identifications that it makes. Now, having said that, you know, the bulk of my work for 30 years has been within spiritualism as a religion, in Christian spiritualist churches, in spiritualist centres, in SNU spiritualist churches. And there was a time that I never really felt like I was kind of being authentic to myself, that this gave me a platform, it gave me an environment to be able to express my mediumistic ability. But I never really resonated with the religion itself. And so for me, now that I don't work within spiritualism, for that reason, because I think it presents a limitation to the expression of my soul, that isn't to say that it's not powerful or positive for many, many people, just as it has been for me in the past. And there are some wonderful people who are upholding spiritualist centers and churches around the world that are devoted to doing good and to explore mediumship, spirituality and such things, which is phenomenal. So I think the religion of spiritualism is one thing. I think the aspects of spirituality is a separate thing. And sadly, those two things aren't always kind of in alignment with each other, from my experience.
Going to your book again, Darren, you wrote this beautiful book, From Innocence to Innocence. Why did you decide to write that? Or at what point in your career did you think, oh, gosh, I really need to put this now into a book? How did that begin?
Well, it was probably about 12 years into my mediumship, into my working as a medium, that I was kind of being inspired by the spirit world to kind of jot a few things down, you know, noticing things that were happening in my mediumship, things that were happening in my understanding. And I would kind of make little notes just as a journal occasionally about those things. And really, you know, that was kind of, they were there. They were sat on the computer in a file, unlooked at, untouched for many years. You know, they were just added to, but never really looked at. And then COVID hit and lockdowns happened and, you know, the world changed. And I think like many of us, we were exploring ourselves, looking at, you know, what do we want? Who am I? Who am I with this or without this job? And I think there was a, you know, kind of a sorting out of who am I? Certainly from my perspective, that's how it felt. And I was just looking through a computer and looking through my files and saw these kind of writings that had been there for years. And I decided to open them and look through them. And the spirit world said, your book has already been written. Your book has already been written. And so when I looked at the things that I'd been inspired to write from all these years before, there was a lot in there that I think would be very, that I felt would be very helpful to many other people who have been on this same pathway. Although our experience will be different of the spirit world and unique as we are, there were elements that were very common, I think, to many of us. And that's really what made me want to put it into the book format, is that it would have the potential to help people understand an aspect of their mediumship, which I think many of us, you know, have. So I can't say, I mean, many people have said to me, did you want to do it to help people? And whilst that's a really noble thing, it really wasn't the primary motivation. It was about the fact I just wanted to express what the soul wanted. And clearly that inspiration that came from a place that demonstrated an intelligence that these years later I would want to put that into a form that people could read and benefit from, hopefully. So it really was about the expression of information as a part of my soul's purpose. That was really the motivator behind it. It was, without diminishing it, it was basically a cut and paste book that I kind of put together based on those years of kind of inspirations that came previously, with a few bits in between to kind of link the bits together.
Yeah, that's great. But it's beautifully written because it goes through your childhood. It goes through your whole process of becoming aware of the spirit world and takes you right up to the now almost. Yeah. So, and where can people buy this book if they want to go and read it, which I highly recommend everybody does?
Thank you. So it's available really worldwide. It's printed in the UK, but it's actually available through all online retailers. It's available through all bookstores around the world. If you are outside of the UK, you can place an order wherever you are in the world. It will be printed in your country and dispatched from that area. So there aren't any places in the world that are unavailable. Everything can be accessed now. So
perfect. And it is. And it says on the back, a vital handbook for those studying mediumship. And I totally agree with those words. It was so helpful to me. It was so useful. It's packed full of information for people to learn so much more from you. So thank you.
Thank you.
So, Darren, what do you think? You now work in this wonderful area of soul appraisals and looking at people and their reasons for being here. What is your current understanding, which I know will evolve over the coming years, more than likely, but what is your current understanding of why we're here as soul beings?
I used to think that we're here to help people. I used to think that's what mediumship was all about. And you know, at that point, once we start to identify with that thought, then we usually become very aligned with an outcome, you know, which is about satisfying usually a need within the medium. So my current understanding is really that my work, all of our work in medium, should not be about other people. And that sounds a really harsh, almost unkind thing to suggest. I think that the reason that we're here is to remember who we really are, separate to the ego, separate to the identity, separate to all the top layer of Darren Britton, of Antioto. You know, we're not here to understand us on that level. We're here to understand who we are spiritually, to remember who we are. So that's my understanding.
And what, here's a controversial question, what's your understanding of God?
Wow, that's huge. For me, it's a power, it's a presence. When we talk about sitting in the power, I believe that we are sitting in full conscious awareness that we are God. that there isn't a separateness, that there isn't a long bearded man sat on a cloud issuing out judgments. I think we humanize God. I think that there are many cultures and certainly religions that give God a human face. And I think that we believe sometimes in those cultures that God will treat humans like people treat humans. And I think that's the mistake that we make in terms of how we view God. So I look at God as love. I look at God as power. I look at God's intelligence. I look at God as mercy, as wisdom. I think it was Ianla Van Zandt said that the soul she felt was that the fingerprint of God. I would go one further and say that we are God, and not the religious God that's punitive or judgmental or critical, but that we tap into and we are that loving power that becomes evident through us.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. I think that's really beautifully expressed. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you are teaching. You teach wonderful things on your website. I see development circle. No, a development. What do you call it? A progression group? A development
group? Just a development group, yeah.
Yeah, and is that still on offer, Darren?
So at the moment, I'm running groups at the moment, and both of them are filled at the moment. They're a six-week development group. So we're looking at the principles of the book, the mind, the power, the connection, the breath, the people, the language, the expression, and the environment. So we're looking at those elements in terms of how they impact our mediumistic state and our expression of mediumship. So that's two six-week groups. They are fully booked at the moment, but I will be looking to open them up again from around about March, April onwards this year. I see people on a one-to-one basis for individual tuition. I don't like to call it mentorship because I think that, again, there's something about the label of being a mentor, which, again, to me doesn't quite resonate. So I sit with people on a one-to-one and we look at what's going on in their mediumship, looking what's going on in their mind, what are the aspects of themselves that are preventing the expression of the mediumship. So that's what I offer on a one-to-one basis. But really my attitude to all students of mediumship is that you already are ready-made. You know, you already all have the ability to be phenomenal mediums. It's all there. It's inherent within you. But my role as a tutor, really, I guess, is to look at what are the elements of you, your mind, your belief, your experiences, your expectation. What are you bringing to the experience that's limiting the expression of that? I think it was Michelangelo that said that when he was invited to ask about his work as a sculptor, he said that when he's given the block of stone to carve, the form's already there. He just has to look at reducing or limiting those bits that are limiting that form being expressed and seen. So that's really how I look at the tuition of mediumship. I can't do the teaching. I'm just looking at what is obscuring the expression of that beautiful power that's already inherent.
That's such a great explanation. It's a really good way to look at it. So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Do you have an exercise then that you could maybe give us? You spoke earlier, or I asked you more to the point, about how we can become more aware of getting more evidence and becoming more in tune with the spirit world. Have you got something you can offer to people listening that they might be able to try out either next time they're working or maybe at home right now or when they're demonstrating?
So I think the important thing is that when we start to employ techniques in mediumship, we give an invitation to the mind to get involved. And so when we have a technique that, you know, we say you have to do a certain thing to get a certain result, there are two things that come up there within the mind. One part is there's a ritualistic part of that where we have to think about what we're doing and we have to follow that thought and we have to do it repetitively for it to be successful. But then there's another part of the mind that's obviously looking for success. You know, it's measuring how successful is that exercise. So really, from my perspective as a teacher, I'm not a great fan of teaching techniques because they involve the mind. So what I can offer you is an experience to identify more fully with the soul that you are, beyond the mind, beyond the body, so that you can start to become in alignment with that power where the spirit world are easier to access because you're already in the spirit world. And one way of doing that really is by taking a moment just to sit or lie comfortably and focus on, for example, your left foot and focus on the physicality of it, how it feels, how your sock or your shoe covers your left foot. But then move beyond the physicality and be curious about the energy in your left foot and look for the vibration or the subtle feeling of movement of energy within your left foot. And then move up to the calf and the shin and then the upper thigh and notice the physicality, but look beyond that to experience the energy or the vibration of energy within it. Moving then to the leg, the other leg, the arms, the torso, the stomach, the abdomen, the hips, the chest, the shoulders, and moving to the face and the head, and start to experience yourself as a spiritual being first, and start to move into that beyond the mind. Because if we start to say to you, don't think a certain way, then by nature of the mind, we will think about a certain thing. It's like me saying, don't think about a black dog. You're going to think about a black dog, you know? So we can't experience the spiritual self by the mind, through the mind. We have to look beyond that. So instead, using that exercise, you're identifying with the power that you are. You're identifying with the spirit that you are, that puts you in alignment with the power that is around us always.
That's really quite brilliant.
Thank you.
As we were doing that, I was like, oh, I can feel this energy in my left foot. So interesting. I want to really go away and really work on that. That's beautiful. Thank you, Darren. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Darren, thank you so much for all of your incredible knowledge and sharing so much with us today. We're so appreciative. And I wonder if you could just let people know what you've got coming up in terms of what you're teaching, and where people can find you if they want to come and book a soul appraisal with you, for instance.
Sure. So the first point of contact really would be my website, www.darrenbritton.co.uk. There's information on there about soul appraisals, about the development groups that I take, and also about upcoming events that I'm teaching. On the 19th and 20th of March, I'm teaching a trans class and a group on the importance of awareness for the Inner Spiritual Center in New Jersey. So that's available the 19th and 20th of March. That's on my website as well at the moment.
And do you have any travel plans? Are you teaching abroad? Are you, now that the pandemic is lifting and we're all moving around?
No, well, that class was meant to be in person, but then because of COVID restrictions and changes and traveling issues, that's not possible. So hopefully these events will be online in March, but hopefully in October this year, I'll be back over to the Inner Spiritual Center in person for events, COVID permitting, and potentially Denmark as well later in the year.
And of course, you've got your business Facebook page. So if people are Facebook users, they can go to your Facebook page and look up all the things that you're doing on your Facebook page.
Sure. Yeah. So there's a Facebook page for myself under my name. There's also a Facebook page for the book, From Innocence to Inner Sense. And that's also available for people to reach me as well.
Darren Britton, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I hope you have thoroughly enjoyed that episode and have learned loads. Talking to Darren was so enlightening, and he's such an interesting man, working incredibly hard out there, as you can hear. And he holds so much expert knowledge, which makes him a fantastic teacher. Please do go over to his website or his Facebook pages and look at all his upcoming workshops and events. And I'm sure you'll find something on there that you will really love. And I can highly recommend you purchase and read his oh-so-brilliant book, From Innocence to Inner Sense. And you can pick up the links to Darren's book and to all of the resources mentioned in this episode over on my website, annentheato.com, annentheato.com, along with a full transcript. Oh, I'm getting a bit croaky, aren't I? Excuse me. For now, I wish you all a wonderful couple of weeks, and thank you so very much for listening. Please, please do go to Podchaser and leave a written review, or go over to Apple Podcasts and you can leave a review that way, and let's try to get to number one. Until next time, my name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.